Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
New York Governor Cuomo is quickly running out of time before he has to make some big decisions about New York State's estimated $14 billion budget deficit. He's hoping that Congress will pass a bailout measure to avert some of the financial pain, but some Republican senators are resisting. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The governor and state legislature set up rules for coping with an expected shortfall when they approved this year's budget plan in early April as tax collections were plummeting. The timeline began on May 15th when State Controller Tom DiNapoli issued his April cash report. It found a drastic revenue shortfall. DiNapoli spoke in an interview with public radio and television.
The revenues being off compared to a year ago by close to 70%, a drop in revenue. No surprise, the economy's been on hold, so the lack of economic activity certainly has not been generating the kinds of revenue that we traditionally had.
The governor's budget director, Robert Mujica, says that if the next federal relief package, now being negotiated in Congress, does not contain funds for state and local government, then New York will have to cut over $8 billion.
In the absence of the receipt of federal funds, 90% of the state's spending is in the areas of school aid, health care, social services.
Cuomo says those cuts would mean reductions to first responders and frontline workers who have been the heroes of the pandemic.
Who do state and local governments fund? They fund the hospitals, they fund the police, they fund the firefighters, they fund the school teachers, they fund the food banks.
The governor has said he does not want to raise taxes in a devastated economy to close the gap. There's cause for hope for closing the deficit in a federal relief package passed by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and other Democrats who lead that chamber. The $3 trillion measure gives $900 billion to state and local governments hit hard by the virus. But there's resistance among some Republican senators, including Senate leader Mitch McConnell. He said he's unwilling to bail out blue states like New York and California. Cuomo has alternately expressed confidence and deep worry over the future of the House bill, dubbed the HEROES Act. He has castigated McConnell and said partisan politics have no place during a pandemic.
In this situation, they should rise above, and this should not be about politics. It should not be about red and blue. The people who are dying here are not Democrats or Republicans, they're Americans.
But the governor has also said he thinks it's in the GOP senators' own interest to bail out states, because many states led by Republicans are also suffering from the effects of the virus-related economic shutdowns. And many senators, including McConnell, face re-election in 2020.
Never underestimate a politician's instinct for self-survival.
State Controller DiNapoli says time is running out, though. The Senate is not expected back in Washington until May 26th at the earliest.
The challenge is we need it sooner than later. The deadlock now, or disagreement that seems to be there between the Senate and the House, it needs to be resolved and needs to be resolved sooner than later. If not, you know, we will be faced with those budget cuts.
The governor and his budget director have until May 30th to decide. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan?
The Democratic primary in New York, scheduled for June 23rd, will definitely take place now, Alan. The state's Democratic Party leadership gave up its attempt to cancel the presidential primary Tuesday. It did so after the Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals agreed that the primary must include the contest over the state's objections. Supporters of Bernie Sanders and Andrew Yang had challenged the cancellation of the primary.
Well, look, David, as you know, we've been talking about this for a little while now. I think it was a mistake for the state committee. I assume that the governor had something to do with that. I think that the state committee isn't going to go against the governor and said people shouldn't be getting together in small places, and therefore we want to protect them. The minute you protect people from voting, you've got a very serious situation. And, David, as I've been saying all along, you set up a precedent for the president of the United States doing the same thing if he's losing in his election. So it was a bad idea, and the governor has obviously and his state committee have come around to where they ought to be. The idea is if you're going to have a primary, it should probably be done by mail. It should probably be done by computer. But if you're not going to do that, then you just got to open the doors.
Well, we know, Alan, that Governor Andrew Cuomo has expanded powers during this COVID pandemic, including with the budget, looking at it quarterly. We're looking at about, last estimate, $14 billion deficit. I'm reading an article, though. It's from Spectrum News. Some lawmakers feel like they're on the pandemic sidelines. The issue, Cuomo getting the spotlight, managing everything from the Capitol while many legislators stuck in their home districts. There will be some voting coming up, and decisions have to be made, as our Karen DeWitt points out, in the coming week or so. And this idea that they're on the outs, the legislators.
Well, my thought about this is that this is journalism 101, you know, around here. You got nothing else to do. You start building these fires between one or two legislators who have negative things to say about a governor who is extraordinarily popular right now, and who has, in this time of crisis, gotten a tremendous send-off for his work on this. Yes, there will be legislators who are jealous. There will be people who will say he has too much power. And we know that he has, on occasion, made a couple of mistakes, which he has corrected. Nevertheless, when we're looking at a legislature which has not exactly been out front, they have given the governor these powers. He has asked for them. He got them. And in my mind, he should have them, because we don't know whether or not the feds are going to give the money that needs to help buttress the states. My own feeling is that despite Trump's missteps and his lies and all the rest of it, he has to, because there are too many governors, including many, many Republican governors, who have to see aid to the states. He can and they will portray this as blue state incompetence, but it's not only blue states, it's across the country. And so I have a feeling that, you know, a lot of the people in Congress are responding directly to their governors and to the people in these states, including red states and blue states. So in the end, they'll get their pound of flesh, but they'll give the money. That's what the governor is depending on. If you've got $10 billion or more that you have to make up, you'd have to fire a lot of teachers, a lot of cops, and a lot of medical people in these states. And I don't think that this president can afford to let that happen. That's my sense of it. You know, in some ways, New York is getting now through this pandemic virus. You know, the Javits Center has been closed up as a potential hospital. The hospital ship has been sent back. The numbers are looking better. But it's going, in many ways, to some of the red states. And that is why I think Trump is between a rock and a hard place, although I don't know that he cares.
Are we at the point, though, with this pandemic, Alan, for example, in New York and, well, I guess around the country, that the healthcare system is somewhat inadequate to handle something like this? And if anything, there should be more money put into it rather than any cuts that could come as a result if all that federal money doesn't come?
Absolutely. And of course, this strengthens the argument for all of those people who believe we have to have a better healthcare system in the United States, better funded without giving so much of it to the insurance companies, a national system. It needs to be done. And I think this puts the dot on the I, crosses the T's, and people will see it for what it is. It is a disgrace that we don't have it and that the states are forced to come up with results here on their own, which are different in each state. This is just wrong.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
You
are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. New York State is predicting a $445 billion economic impact from COVID-19, greater than 2008's Great Recession and the recession following the 9/11 attacks. Groups are now analyzing how each region's economies will be affected during a prolonged recovery. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports on how public employees may be affected.
On a Zoom call organized by the Capital District Regional Planning Commission Thursday, Laura Schultz, Director of Fiscal Analysis and Senior Economist at the Rockefeller Institute of Government, said COVID-19 will have lingering effects long after a vaccine is developed.
While the recovery will likely start soon as these regions start to reopen, the impacts are going to be over the long term. New York State is looking at revenue challenges for the next 4 years, and municipalities should probably be looking at that time range as well.
But an analysis of New York State unemployment data shows the Capital Region has among the lowest percentage of unemployment claims statewide at this time.
Capital Region has fared the best to date, with about only 14% of 2019 employment filing for unemployment, but you see bigger hits in Long Island and Western New York.
Schultz said that 22% of the Capital Region's workforce works in state and local government. And to date, that sector has accounted for just 1% of unemployment claims over the last several weeks. But Schultz warned that without federal aid, state and local governments could see revenue shortfalls of up to 20%. Now, she says, it's time to take lessons from the recession and recovery a decade ago. Kate Baker, interim director of the New York State Small Business Development Center at the University at Albany, said that means throwing the old way of doing things out the window.
You know, prior to the pandemic, many times groups worked in silos. And fortunately, we're seeing those silos break down, but I think they need to break down even more.
Baker said the worst thing anyone in any sector can do right now is to make a decision based on, well, that's how we've always done it.
Doesn't mean that the process isn't wrong. But you should be looking at every process, everything that you do, how you do it, and evaluating, is this the most effective way for us to do this? Is it the most cost-effective way?
That includes new business models, partnerships, and collaborations. And public employee unions are bracing for an impact. CSEA Communications Director Mark Coatson said the union has two main focuses at this time.
One is to make sure we get the federal funding that is going to allow our state and localities to recover from the economic impact the pandemic has had.
CSEA's other focus is to make sure that workplaces are safe to go back to, workplaces that may not look the same as they did pre-COVID-19. Governor Andrew Cuomo has warned of deep cuts to education and municipal governments if federal aid to localities does not get approved in Washington. Randy D'Antonio, vice president of the Public Employees Federation, says PEF is advocating for other ways to maintain funding as well, including a billionaire's tax. D'Antonio acknowledged that there hasn't been the political will to raise taxes on the rich in recent years, but she says COVID has created a fiscal crisis not seen before.
And to take it out of schools and state services and on the backs of the essential workforce, who are basically, you know, on the front lines taking care of everybody else, you know, I don't think that's the answer.
D'Antonio said prior to the pandemic, PEF was still fighting to restore pre-Great Recession levels of public sector employment.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
Municipalities in the Capital Region of New York are laying off workers and cutting services with revenues sharply down during the pandemic. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas with that story.
The COVID-19 shutdown has forced municipalities to cancel major events and will likely impact summer recreation and other programs. Albany is facing up to a $20 million revenue shortfall, according to second-term Democratic Mayor Kathy Sheehan, who says she won't take a paycheck for the rest of the year.
Well, we're in the process of contemplating really unprecedented layoffs and cuts to city services as a result of the loss of revenue that we are experiencing because of COVID-19. And as we look to Congress to act and to hopefully pass legislation that would allow us to replace that revenue, I decided that I didn't want to hold off on one of the cuts that would be part of any action, and that is to forego my salary for the rest of the year.
Sheehan says not every public official can be expected to forego a salary or take a huge pay cut.
Looking at what people are facing, I'm in a position to be able to do this. That's not a position that most people are in. And so in looking at what we're planning for, we decided to hold off and see what happens with the Senate this week because we want to avoid having to make some really devastating and difficult decisions as we move forward. So I'm really hopeful that people will make their voices heard and that the Senate will take some action to provide state and local relief. This is not unique to the city of Albany. Cities and towns and villages across the country have seen unprecedented drops in their revenue.
Albany Common Council President Corey Ellis, also a Democrat, says the panel cannot afford to let any employees go.
So we decided that we would look at reducing salaries so that we could keep our most valuable employees in our own department. As far as the mayor taking a pay cut, that is her right to do. She's in a position to do that. That's great. But a lot of people aren't in that same position to do such things. So we wouldn't apply that universally. But as a council, we're looking at reducing our salaries if possible, so that way we can keep valuable staff that we need within our own department.
Ellis says tonight's Common Council meeting convenes at 6:30. It will be held using Zoom and streamed through the Common Council's Facebook page. He says the agenda is a small one.
Well, tonight we have up for vote is the local law for first-time home buyers. We have that up for a vote. We also have a consideration of a veto, overriding the mayor's veto on the blood plasma ordinance, and we have a couple more resolutions about property tax exempts for veterans possibly coming up for a vote tonight.
Schenectady faces an $11 million loss. Democratic Mayor Gary McCarthy agrees federal assistance is the only way to avoid cuts to vital city services, the fire and police departments.
Some assistance from the federal government would come in and help stabilize not only the city of Schenectady, but, you know, other communities across New York State and other communities across the country. We're at $11 million. You know, if I eliminate every non-public safety position in the city, we would still have to cut police and fire to equal those payroll dollars.
Schenectady City Council President John Mudavaren tells WAMC that other than small city initiatives, there is nothing major on the agenda for this evening's 5:30 meeting, which will also be available online. Links to both meetings are posted at wamc.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. As portions of New York State begin the first of a four-phase reopening plan, the question of whether the state will allow summer camps to open remains. Initially, a concern about large gatherings, the decision has been complicated by a number of cases where children are becoming ill with a rare inflammatory syndrome believed to be related to COVID-19. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn with more.
During Governor Andrew Cuomo's briefing, a reporter asked a question about opening summer camps. State Budget Director Robert Mujica says there were guidelines being drawn for opening and operating summer camps.
The new cases that were arising with children, right? We're looking at re-looking at those guidelines. Other states around us were also moving to open summer camps. They've also slowed down that process. We do have guidelines for child care, but as far as camps where people were sleeping away, how you do that in the context of the new cases we're re-looking at. So we don't have an answer yet on summer camps, but we're looking at opening them there. Their deadline, close to when they generally open, is in the end of June. So we will get guidance out and make a decision, you know, way in time before that. But right now, the public health concern is the first.
State officials say predominantly school-aged children experience symptoms similar to an atypical Kawasaki disease or a toxic shock-like syndrome. The first child death from the syndrome in New York was reported at the beginning of May. Sullivan County is part of the Mid-Hudson region in terms of a reopening plan, and Sullivan County Manager Josh Potosik serves on its regional control board. He says he has expressed to the state the public's desire to know whether state-regulated summer camps will be opening this season.
Safety is paramount with anything we try to reopen. So we've been working with both secular and non-secular camps on if they were to open or be allowed to open, how would that work? So we've been looking at plans that they've developed with public health and our EOC to see, and they're close. They meet a lot of the metrics on how we would want to see a camp operate. So we are in the planning phases. We don't want to be at the end of June and have a determination made scrambling to see how they could open safely. So I think we've taken a prudent approach and taken a couple months of planning to see if they are allowed to open, this is what it would look like.
The Mid-Hudson has not yet met the 7 metrics to start reopening. In addition to Sullivan, the Mid-Hudson region per the state is now Dutchess, Putnam, Orange, Rockland, Ulster, and Westchester counties. The region remains under the New York pause restrictions. During Sunday's briefing, Cuomo also spoke to whether summer camps could reopen.
This issue with this Kawasaki-like syndrome is, I think, very important. We have about 120 cases now that we're investigating in New York. People say, oh, that's only 120 children. I don't believe it's only 120 children. I believe this is a syndrome that we are just discovering.
He says 16 other states and 5 countries are starting to see the syndrome turn up in children. State Health Commissioner Dr. Howard Zucker says the number of children with the illness is rising across the country. Again, Cuomo.
On the summer camps issue, on any of these children-related issues, it's really important for us to get the facts on, is this just 120 kids and it's an anomaly, or is that just the tip of the iceberg, and that represents thousands of kids who have had this reaction?
Potosik says leaving summer camps closed likely would impact his county financially.
Any people coming up here, whether they're camps or not, are generating, employing people. I mean, so they're employing some locals to operate the camps, but also buying supplies and other needed things here.
In addition to camps, counties are looking at whether a host of summer facilities could safely reopen, such as pools, and which events could still be held. Reporting from WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau on the campus of Vassar College,
for the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
A warm weather rite of passage returned for the first time this year. Last weekend, with normal activities halted during the coronavirus pandemic, Capital Region families were ready. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Jackie Orchard.
The line of cars waiting outside the Jericho Drive-In movie theater in Glenmont, just outside Albany, stretches down the street and out of sight on this Saturday. Drivers and ticket takers alike wear masks, and each car receives a set of strict safety rules.
You got 2 adults?
Yep.
All right, you're all set. It's 98.9 FM on your radio. The boys are going to hand you a pink slip of paper, which is the rules you have to follow tonight, and a trash bag.
Owner Lisa Chanette says it's great that they sold out opening night, but they're facing an uncertain summer, which requires some creativity.
Because a lot of the movie releases have been pushed back to July, September, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. So we're not actually sure what our season is going to look like. We do have a lot of high school graduations planned for the month of June, so we won't be having a lot of movies in the month of June on the weekends, but we're just trying to figure out what we can play and maybe some other activities that we can do here at the drive-in.
Chanette says you have to wear a mask every time you leave your vehicle, and guests are encouraged to not leave their vehicles at all. Concessions are ordered online, and people are no longer allowed to set up chairs or blankets outside of their cars to watch the show. Despite all that, families are ready. Crystal Karash Todd from Ravina is cozying up with her husband Steve, stepson Noah, and daughter Eris, buried in pillows and blankets in the back seat.
We've been looking forward to this forever, just for weeks. I mean, even before the pandemic, we bought our season passes.
Noah and Eris say there's something magical about being at the drive-in instead of in their living room.
Because you get to see it on a big screen.
Yeah, and it makes it a whole more bigger.
Their parents say there's another added benefit.
Getting out of the house. And this is the beginning of the summer to me. I love to drive.
Yeah. And it's a good deal. I mean, you a lot of times they'll do a triple feature. And usually we have another kid with us, and we get to see a movie for $35 for a whole three movies for $35.
Geneseo student Olivia Fazio, Tia Snyder, a senior at Shaker High School, and her younger sister, Kylie Snyder, of Shaker Junior High, all transitioned to remote learning due to the pandemic.
Hi, guys.
Hi, how are you?
They're propped up on their elbows, listening to pop music and eating burritos. Olivia misses being at Geneseo and says the drive-in is a brief return to normal.
It's just so weird because we never, like, experienced anything like it. So it's just, it's, like, so unprecedented where it's kind of, you just got to roll with it, I guess. But it's definitely been, like, weird being home from school.
Olivia says she misses normal things, like leaving the house for no reason.
Being able to go, like, places and, like, see my friends and family, like, that's going to be the best part. And just, like, giving someone, like, a hug.
Tia agrees.
And just, like, having, like, things being open. Like, yeah. It's just different, like, when you just go out, and even if we're just, like, driving around.
After a striking pink sunset, one by one, drivers start tuning their radios. A Simpsons short about Maggie finding love kicks things off. And then, the main event.
Long ago, the world was full of wonder.
Sitting in a truck in the warm spring air, in front of a giant movie screen while families crunch through the gravel to pick up popcorn and ice cream, watching puppies run up to strangers because they don't care about social distancing, and kids adjusting their Spider-Man masks. Well, it's a far cry from people yelling at each other in the grocery store over who got to the toilet paper first. Reporting from Glenmont, New York, I'm Jackie Orchard.
I like the specials. I thought it was awesome.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 2021. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.